Welcome back to The Deep Dive, where we take your source material and distill it into the essential insights you need to be truly well-informed. Today, we're embarking on a pretty fascinating deep dive into a company that, well, it really embodies the complexities of our modern media and telecommunications landscape. Comcast Corporation, ticker CMCSA. We've got a comprehensive investment analysis research report here to guide us, packed with data and insights into a business that's really a tale of two distinct parts, each part facing its own set of intense pressures and, you know, promising opportunities. Our mission today is to unpack these complexities, understand the core conflicts facing this corporate giant, and maybe help you grasp why a company this large, this seemingly ubiquitous, is currently trading at what some folks see as a significant discount. We'll look at its past, its present challenges, and its strategic bets for the future. You should walk away with a clearer picture of what makes Comcast tick, where its strengths truly lie, and what major headwinds it's battling. Okay, let's unpack this. So the report kicks off by describing Comcast as a company at a critical juncture representing the central conflict in its industries. That's a pretty strong statement right out of the gate. What does that mean exactly? What's this core conflict they're highlighting?
Well, what's fascinating here is how the report immediately frames Comcast not as like one single thing, but as two very different businesses operating under one corporate roof. On one side, you have their connectivity and platform segment. This is their historical core, right? Think of it as the mature, highly profitable cash-generating engine. This is where the vast majority of their free cash flow comes from, providing broadband, cable TV, mobile services to millions. Mm-hmm. But this engine, as profitable as it still is increasingly under competitive siege. A lot of pressure.
Okay, the cash engine under siege.
Right. And then on the other side, you have the content and experiences segment. This is the more glamorous side, perhaps, but also really capital intensive, definitely lower margin. It's essentially their big strategic bet on future growth, holding the potential for new revenue streams down the line. However, this segment is also facing its own intense competitive pressures, particularly, you know, in the cutthroat world of streaming and media. So the core conflict is essentially this. Can the cash generated by the challenged legacy business be enough to fund the capital-hungry growth areas and successfully transform the company before those competitive pressures really bite? That's the tightrope they're walking. It's a real balancing act.
So we have a formidable cash engine that's under attack and a growth engine that's essentially a massive capital sink right now, needing huge investment. Despite these challenges, the report does identify some pretty compelling investment merits. What are the big-picture strengths that investors should consider?
Yeah, the core merits, as the report outlines, definitely lie in the financial strength and, frankly, the resilience of its legacy operations. Even with the recent subscriber losses we've seen, the U.S. broadband business remains a formidable cash engine. It still demonstrates significant pricing power, which is key. They can still raise rates even as they lose some customers at the margin. And they're strategically pivoting towards higher value customers, focusing on maximizing profitability per user ARPU, rather than just chasing subscriber count.
So quality over quantity, maybe.
Kind of, yeah. And this strong base is bolstered by two other key areas. The high-margin Comcast business division, serving businesses of all sizes, that's been a consistent growth story for them. And then there's the rapidly growing wireless business, Xfinity Mobile. This wireless piece is crucial for their convergence strategy, bundling services like broadband and mobile together to increase customer loyalty, make them stickier, you know, reduce churn.
Makes sense. Harder to leave if they have both your internet and your phone plan.
Exactly. And on the content side, the theme parks division is a real standout. It's high margin, it's high growth, and it's poised for significant acceleration with the highly anticipated Epic Universe Park opening in Orlando. That's set for May 2025, I believe.
That's a big deal.
A very big deal. A massive bet, but one that promises substantial returns if it works. And crucially, looking at management, they've shown a strong commitment to shareholder returns. They have a consistently growing dividend increase for 18 consecutive years now, which is pretty remarkable. Plus, they're aggressive with share repurchases, buying back their own stock. All of this is funded by substantial free cash flow that has remained surprisingly resilient, consistently above $12.5 billion in recent years.
That's a strong hand of cards, definitely. Yeah. But, you know, every company at a crossroads has its risks. What are the major headwinds that balance out these strengths? What's keeping investors perhaps cautious?
You're absolutely right. These strengths are clearly balanced by significant risks that truly make this a pivotal moment for the company. It's not an easy ride. The traditional pay TV model, for instance, is in a steep secular decline. It's not just slowing down, it's shrinking, significantly accelerated by what we all know as cord cutting.
Everyone's cutting the cord.
Yeah, consumers are ditching traditional cable subscriptions at an alarming rate, and that erodes a historically lucrative, very high-margin revenue stream for them. Simultaneously, their core broadband business, that primary cash engine, faces what the report calls a two-front war. Which is a great description, actually.
Okay, two fronts. What are they?
On one front, you have fiber overbuilders like AT&T and Verizon aggressively investing billions to expand their fiber optic networks. These are often marketed as, you know, technologically superior to cable's HFC infrastructure.
Faster speeds, symmetrical speeds sometimes.
Exactly. Creating a direct, high-speed wireline competitor right in Comcast's backyard in their established territories. On the other front, and maybe even more disruptive recently, are fixed wireless access, or FWA, providers. Think T-Mobile and Verizon, using their 5G cellular networks for home internet.
Right, the little boxes you plug in.
Yeah, they compete aggressively on price. They offer a viable, often lower-priced alternative, and they've been responsible for nearly all new U.S. broadband net subscriber additions over the past 2 years. They're directly contributing to Comcast's recent subscriber losses.
Wow, nearly all. That's significant.
It is. And in media, you've got Peacock, their streaming platform. It requires massive and sustained content investment with a long and, frankly, uncertain path to profitability in the streaming wars. Those wars are dominated by much larger, more established players like Netflix and Disney+. Peacock is still relatively small.
It feels like they're playing catch-up there.
They absolutely are. It's like jumping into a very crowded pool and having to spend a fortune just to keep your head above water. And all this is layered on a substantial, though currently manageable, debt load from past acquisitions, particularly that big $39 billion acquisition of Sky back in 2018.
So, given this complex, picture-declining legacy business, capital-intensive growth engine, intense competition on all sides, what does this all mean for someone looking at the company's actual value in the market? Is the market getting it right, you think?
Well, from a valuation perspective, the report suggests there's a pretty significant disconnect between Comcast's current market price and what its intrinsic worth might be. Its current market valuation, which you can see in historically low earnings multiples, seems to overly penalize the connectivity business's competitive pressures. For instance, its trailing 12-month price-to-earnings, or PE, ratio is down around 8.1x.
That sounds low for a company this size.
It is incredibly low, historically speaking, significantly below its historical five-year median. It's the market essentially shouting, we don't believe in their future earnings power as much as we used to, even though the underlying business is still churning out massive cash flow. And here's where it gets really interesting. The market appears to be assigning very little, maybe even zero, value to its vast content portfolio.
Really? Like the studios and parks?
It's exactly. Including the highly profitable theme parks and the valuable studio IP library from Universal Pictures. It's almost like you're getting that entire segment for free at the current market price. A sum of the parts, or SOTP, analysis, which we can dig into more, suggests that the individual segments, if valued separately, could be worth substantially more than the current consolidated value.
The conglomerate discount.
Precisely. It indicates a severe conglomerate discount. This means investors often struggle to value a company with such diverse businesses, penalizing it compared to what its individual pieces might fetch if they were standalone companies. So the whole investment thesis really hinges on whether those durable cash flows from the legacy business can effectively fund the transition to this new converged experience-driven model before those competitive pressures cause, you know, irreparable erosion. That's the crux of it.
Now that we understand the big picture, this cash engine versus growth engine dynamic, let's peel back the layers on these two distinct halves of Comcast. We'll start with connectivity and platforms, what the report describes as the cash engine, the real heart of their profitability.
Right. This segment is indeed the historical core and the primary driver of Comcast's profitability and free cash flow. It's a mature business, definitely, but characterized by high margins and extensive scale, even as it navigates this heightened competition. Just to put some numbers on it, in 2024, the segment generated roughly 66% of Comcast's total revenue, but a commanding 86% of the company's adjusted EBITDA.
86%?
Wow. Yeah, it underscores its absolutely critical role in funding everything else across the corporation. Without it, the picture looks very different. Within this segment, You first have Xfinity Cable Communications. This is the bedrock. As the largest broadband provider in the U.S., its extensive hybrid fiber coaxial, or HFC, network passes nearly 64 million homes and businesses. That reach is enormous. High-speed internet is the lead product here, driving the bulk of its revenue and profit. They still offer traditional video and wireline voice services, but those are clearly seeing secular declines in subscribers, as we discussed with cord cutting. No surprise there.
Right. The HFC network. Still the core asset.
Very much so. But they're not just resting on their laurels with broadband. They've also strategically expanded into Xfinity Mobile, launched back in 2017. This wireless service operates as a mobile virtual network operator, an MVNO, basically piggybacking on Verizon's network infrastructure. It's a key growth driver and central to Comcast's convergence strategy, that bundling of broadband and mobile services.
Trying to create that sticky ecosystem.
That's the goal. Increase loyalty, reduce churn. The report shows strong momentum here, reaching 8.5 million lines by Q2 2025, with record quarterly net additions recently. It's all about making it harder for a customer to leave their ecosystem. Then there's Comcast Business. This division provides connectivity and other services to small, medium, and even large enterprise-level businesses. Mm-hmm. It's been a consistent, high-margin growth engine for them, nearing $10 billion in annual revenue. It holds over 50% market share in the small business segment within its network footprint, which is impressive. This part of the business has been a steady, reliable source of incremental growth for years now.
Okay. Less flashy, maybe, but very profitable.
Exactly. And finally, within this connectivity segment, you have Sky. International connectivity. Acquired in 2018, Sky offers pay TV, broadband, and mobile services primarily in the UK, Ireland, Italy, and Germany. It's a leading provider in its core European markets and extends Comcast's connectivity footprint internationally, diversifying their revenue streams geographically. Though, as we'll discuss, that acquisition came at a hefty price.
Okay, so that's the cash engine, those mature, established businesses supporting the whole enterprise. But what about the other half, the content and experiences segment? The report calls it their growth engine and capital sink. Quite a striking description. What exactly are they pouring money into here, and why is it so crucial for their future?
It is a striking description, isn't it? This segment holds Comcast's vast media and entertainment assets, and it really represents their big strategic bet on the future of content creation, distribution, monetization. It definitely has significant growth potential, but it's equally characterized by immense capital requirements, lower margins compared to connectivity, and intense competition, hence that capital sink label. It's a high-stakes, very expensive game they're playing.
So what's inside this segment?
Well, first you have media, NBC Universal. This is a premier portfolio, including the NBC and Telemundo broadcast networks, plus well-known cable networks like USA, Bravo, CNBC, MSNBC. Crucially, it also houses their direct-to-consumer streaming service, Peacock, which is their primary answer to the streaming wars. This is where they aim to capture the audience that's moving away from traditional TV bundles.
Peacock still feels like it's finding its footing.
It absolutely is.
Yeah.
It's improving, but still has a long way to go. Next up are the studios, Universal Pictures. This is the film and television production arm, a critical supplier of intellectual property, or IP, for the entire company. This includes the iconic Universal Pictures Studio, along with animation powerhouses, DreamWorks Animation and Illumination, the creators of Despicable Me and The Minions.
Ah, The Minions. Big business.
Huge business. Their content fuels theatrical releases, populates Peacock with exclusive programming, and forms the creative foundation for many theme park attractions. It's a true content factory, feeding multiple parts of their ecosystem. And finally, the theme parks, Universal Destinations and Experiences. This is a high-margin, high-growth business with parks in the U.S., Japan, and China. It's been a standout performer, recovering very strongly post-pandemic. Its growth is expected to accelerate significantly with that highly anticipated opening of the new flagship park, Epic Universe, in Orlando in May 2025.
That park sounds like a game changer for them.
It's a multi-billion dollar investment, but the expected returns are substantial. Theme parks are a fantastic business when they hit, and Epic Universe is expected to be a major hit, drawing millions of visitors and driving significant profit growth. It's a critical near-term growth driver.
We've talked about this cash engine versus growth engine dynamic conceptually, but the report really lays it bare with the financial numbers for 2024, doesn't it? What do those figures tell us about the actual performance of these two very different businesses?
They really do. The financial numbers from 2024 hammer home that dynamic. The connectivity and platform segment generated $81.3 billion in revenue and a whopping $32.8 billion in adjusted EBITDA. Huge numbers.
Okay, $81 billion revenue, almost $33 billion EBITDA.
Exactly. Now, contrast that with Content and Experiences, which had $45.1 billion in revenue, but only $6.7 billion in adjusted EBITDA.
Much lower margin there.
Significantly lower. So as we noted earlier, Connectivity and Platforms, despite being only about 66% of total revenue, delivered a commanding 83% of the company's adjusted EBITDA. This incredible profitability is absolutely essential because it's the engine that funds the significant investments in Content and Experiences, mm-hmm. particularly the ongoing build-out of Peacock, which is still losing money as it scales, and the massive construction costs for new theme parks like Epic Universe.
So Connectivity side is basically paying for the future bets on the content side.
That's a great way to put it. Without that strong, steady cash flow from Connectivity, funding the growth segment would be far more challenging or would necessitate taking on even more debt, which they already carry a fair bit of from the Sky deal.
So we've got this dual structure. Now let's zoom out and unpack the broader industries Comcast operates in. The report describes them as defined by intense competition, rapid technological change, and shifting consumer behavior. That sounds like, well, a perpetual uphill battle.
It truly is. The U.S. broadband market, which was long a comfortable duopoly in most regions, has become a fierce battleground. And that directly threatens Comcast's primary profit center.
Okay, how so?
Well, first, on one front, you have fiber overbuilders. Telecommunications companies, notably AT&T and Verizon, are aggressively investing billions to expand their fiber optic networks. As we said, often marketed as superior. They're literally building directly into Comcast's established neighborhoods, creating a direct, head-to-head fight for customers who want the fastest, most reliable connection. That's a wireline-to-wireline fight.
Direct competition.
Exactly. Then, perhaps the most disruptive force recently has been fixed wireless access, or FWA. Mobile operators like T-Mobile and Verizon using their 5G networks to deliver home internet.
The 5G home internet stuff?
Right. FWA offers a viable, often lower-priced alternative requiring no new wireline infrastructure build-out. It's been responsible for nearly all of the U.S. broadband industry's net subscriber additions over the past 2 years.
That's startling.
It is. It makes FWA a primary cause of Comcast's recent subscriber losses. A 2023 study even suggested widespread FWA entry could lead to a 37% reduction in cable modem service prices long term. That shows the significant pricing pressure this new technology exerts. It forces incumbents like Comcast to react.
Okay, so fiber from above, FWA from below, price-wise, what about their market share?
Well, looking at market share and subscriber trends, while Comcast remains a market leader with its Xfinity brand, its market share is definitely under pressure. The company experienced an acceleration in broadband subscriber losses, reporting a net loss of 226,000 in the second quarter of 2025. That's a significant deterioration from the 120,000 lost in the prior year period.
So the losses are getting worse, not better.
In that quarter, yes. This trend really underscores the severity of the competitive environment they're facing right now. It's not just a blip. It's a sustained challenge that management has to address.
And then on the content side, we can't talk about media without diving into the streaming wars and the ongoing cord-cutting phenomenon. How is that impacting Comcast's strategic thinking? It must be huge.
Oh, absolutely. The secular decline of traditional linear television is fundamentally reshaping the entire media landscape and directly impacting Comcast's business model, forcing them to adapt. Cord cutting, the trend of consumers canceling traditional pay TV subscriptions in favor of streaming options, is accelerating. It's not slowing down. Projections indicate that by 2026, there could be 80.7 million U.S. households without a traditional pay TV service, significantly outnumbering the 54.3 million that remain. That's a massive shift in viewing habits.
80 million households without cable TV soon. Wow.
Yeah. And the primary driver for this shift is overwhelmingly cost. Nearly 87% of cord cutters cite high prices as a key reason for making the switch. This trend directly erodes a high-margin recurring revenue stream for Comcast's Connectivity segment, forcing them to adapt or lose those customers entirely. For context, between 2014 and 2021 alone, Comcast lost over 8 million cable TV subscribers. That's a massive exodus.
Okay, so cord cutting hits the cable side, and that leads to Peacock.
Exactly. This leads us to Peacock's competitive position. Comcast's strategic response to this shift is Peacock. However, Peacock is a relatively late entrant into a mature and intensely competitive streaming market. It's dominated by established global players like Netflix, Amazon Prime Video, Disney Plus style additions. As of early 2025, Peacock held a mere 1% market share in the U.S.
Only 1%? That's tiny compared to the giants.
It is. Building scale and achieving profitability in this environment requires massive, ongoing investment in content, original shows, movies, sports rights. It's a significant financial drag on the content and experiences segment. It's like trying to build a new skyscraper in a city already full of super talls. It requires immense capital and a long timeline just to become visible, let alone profitable.
Beyond market forces, being a company of Comcast's scale also means the regulatory environment is a constant factor. How does that shape their operations and strategy?
Absolutely. As an industry giant, Comcast faces significant regulatory scrutiny, which adds another layer of complexity and can definitely impact their strategy and potentially their profitability. For instance, in May 2024, the Federal Communications Commission, the FCC, reinstated net neutrality rules, reclassifying broadband internet as a Title II telecommunications service.
Ah, yes, net neutrality. That keeps coming back.
It does. This imposes common carrier obligations on providers like Comcast, prohibiting them from blocking or throttling lawful content and banning paid prioritization or fast lanes. These regulations fundamentally limit potential future revenue models, like charging content providers for faster delivery to consumers. And they increase the company's compliance burden, adding to their operational costs.
So less flexibility on how they manage their network and potentially monetize it.
Correct. And then there are persistent antitrust considerations. Comcast's immense scale, achieved through those transformative acquisitions like NBC Universal and Sky, ensures it remains under the constant watch of antitrust regulators. This scrutiny could limit future M&A activity, making it harder for them to grow through large acquisitions like they did in the past. And it fuels ongoing debate about whether the company's vertical integration, owning both the pipes and the content, harms competition.
Right, the age-old debate about vertical integration.
Exactly. This can lead to legal battles, public relations challenges, congressional hearings, all of which are a drain on resources and management attention.
So this confluence of industry dynamics, fiber, FWA, cord cutting, streaming wars, regulation, it presents a truly complex strategic challenge. The report mentions a cannibalization dilemma and a broadband paradox. These sound like real tight spots. Can you explain what these concepts mean for Comcast's overall strategy?
Yeah, these are excellent points that really highlight the strategic tightrope Comcast is walking. It's not easy. The cannibalization dilemma refers to Peacock directly competing with their own highly profitable traditional video bundle.
Competing with themselves.
Essentially, yes. Every customer who replaces a high-cost, high-margin cable package with a low-cost Peacock subscription, even if it's their own product, represents a net loss in overall profitability for Comcast. It's a necessary evil, perhaps, to stay relevant in a changing media landscape, but it directly cuts into their most lucrative legacy business line.
Okay, that's the cannibalization. What about the broadband paradox?
In response to the broadband pressures, those subscriber losses we talked about, the company has initiated a strategic pivot. The report terms the broadband paradox.
Okay.
Despite losing subscribers, Comcast has managed to grow broadband revenue.
How does that work? Losing customers but making more money.
By focusing on increasing average revenue per user, or ARPU. They do this through price adjustments, upselling higher speed tiers, and getting more revenue from the customers they keep. This indicates a deliberate strategy to essentially seed the most price-sensitive customers, those who might switch to cheaper FWA options, and instead focus on retaining and maximizing value from its core high-usage customer base. It's a strategic choice to prioritize profitability per user over sheer subscriber count.
Focusing on the profitable core, letting the low end go.
That seems to be the strategy. And this strategic shift also highlights the evolution of Comcast's competitive moat, its protective barrier. While the physical HFC network remains a formidable barrier to entry, its dominance is clearly being eroded by fiber and FWA. The new emerging moat they are trying to build is the converged bundle, that sticky ecosystem of broadband, mobile, and content. It's designed to increase switching costs and enhance customer lifetime value. They want to make it so difficult and maybe expensive for you to leave that you just stay, essentially locking you into their ecosystem for multiple services.
We've laid out the competitive landscape and strategic challenges. Let's transition to the numbers. A comprehensive review of Comcast's financial history shows a company that has navigated past shifts, but now faces its most complex challenges yet. What does a decade of data reveal about their financial evolution?
Yeah, looking at the financials over the past 10 years really provides critical context. It shows how they've evolved through periods of immense change. Revenue growth was actually pretty robust through 2019, primarily driven by those major acquisitions we mentioned, NBC Universal in 2011 and Sky in 2018. Those were massive company-defining deals that added billions in revenue. However, since 2019, reflecting the maturity of some of their businesses and those increasing competitive pressures, revenue growth has moderated significantly down to low single-digit organic growth, so much slower growth recently.
Okay, growth slowing. What about cash flow?
Free cash flow, though, has proven remarkably resilient. This is really the key financial story here, I think. It has consistently remained above $12.5 billion in recent years, even as the business mix has shifted and competition intensified. This stability is a testament to the high-margin nature of that core connectivity business. As we've discussed, that cash flow is truly the lifeblood of the company, effectively funding everything else, dividends, buybacks, Peacock, theme parks.
That resilience is impressive given the headwinds you mentioned Sky earlier.
Right. The most significant financial event in this period was undoubtedly the 2018 acquisition of Sky. Its impact is clearly visible on the balance sheet. Long-term debt nearly doubled from about $59 billion in 2017 to a staggering $107 billion in 2018.
You doubled the debt. Wow.
Yeah. And the net leverage ratio, which measures debt relative to earnings, spiked from a comfortable 2.2x to 3.3x. This acquisition also weighed heavily on returns. Return on invested capital, or ROIC, a measure of how efficiently they're using shareholder and debt capital to generate profits, fell from over 15% pre-deal down to the high single digits in subsequent years. It was a massive financial undertaking, a huge bet on international expansion.
Did that bet pay off?
Well, the returns have been more muted compared to NBC Universal. However, management has since demonstrated strong financial discipline by steadily reducing that net leverage back down to a more comfortable 2.3x by the end of 2024. This shows their commitment to strengthening the balance sheet after that period of aggressive expansion.
That's a clear picture of resilience through challenging financial periods. Despite some of these mature elements and significant headwinds, the report suggests Comcast has some clearly defined avenues for future growth. Where are they looking to expand and really drive value moving forward? It can't all be defense.
Exactly. Despite the headwinds, there are distinct areas where they can drive significant value and grow the business. It's not just about managing decline. It's about strategic expansion in key areas. The first, and arguably most critical, is broadband and wireless convergence. This is the central growth strategy for the connectivity and platform segment now. By aggressively bundling Xfinity Mobile with high-speed internet, Comcast aims to increase customer retention and average revenue per user, ARPU. Management has explicitly stated they will lean into wireless more than ever before because it creates that highly coveted stickiness.
Make it harder for customers to leave.
Precisely. The success of this strategy is evident in the rapid growth of Xfinity Mobile. It added a record 378,000 lines in Q2 2025, reaching 14% penetration of its domestic broadband customer base. This makes those customers much harder for competitors to poach. Then there's Peacock's path to profitability. While it's still a drag on earnings and a capital sink, Peacock is on a clear trajectory of improvement. In 2024, the streaming service grew revenue by an impressive 46% to $4.9 billion, while its adjusted EBITDA losses actually improved by nearly $1 billion compared to the prior year. So growing fast, losing less money.
Okay, losses narrowing is key.
Very key. With paid subscribers reaching 36 million by year-end 2024, and key content like the Olympics and the new NBA contract set to drive engagement, the focus is on continuing to scale revenue and march towards break-even. It's a long road, but the direction is positive, showing signs of maturation. The theme park's expansion is arguably Comcast's most potent near-term growth driver, offering some of the highest margins in the company. The division generated $2.9 billion in adjusted EBITDA in 2024 and is set for that major boost from the May 2025 opening of Epic Universe in Orlando. This new park, along with other announced projects in Las Vegas and Texas, provides a multi-year runway for significant growth in the high-margin content and experiences segment.
So parks are a real bright spot, potentially.
Potentially a very bright spot. Finally, we have business services and international. Comcast Business continues to be a steady performer, growing revenue and EBITDA by nearly 5% in 2023. With a large addressable market, particularly in the enterprise segment where they have relatively low current market share, it provides a reliable source of incremental growth. Similarly, Sky offers opportunities for growth in European markets through broadband and mobile expansion, extending their reach beyond the somewhat saturated U.S. market.
Okay, so convergence, Peacock improvement, parks, and steady business international growth. Those are the levers.
Those are the main levers they're trying to pull for growth, yes.
But those growth ambitions, they're definitely tempered by significant structural and competitive headwinds we've discussed. What are the major obstacles they're still facing, the ones that could really derail these growth plans?
Yeah, the company's growth aspirations are definitely running into some strong crosscurrents, making their path forward challenging and requiring very precise execution. Nothing is guaranteed here. First and foremost is subscriber erosion. Those dual pressures, cord cutting in video and new competition in broadband, are leading to consistent customer losses. In Q2 2025, remember, Comcast lost 325,000 video subscribers and 226,000 broadband subscribers. While the company is managing to grow broadband revenue through ARPU increases by focusing on higher value customers, the long-term financial impact of a shrinking subscriber base is a primary concern.
It's like trying to fill a bucket with a hole in it.
That's a good analogy. You can keep pouring faster, raising ARPU, but if the hole, subscriber losses, gets bigger, the bucket is still leaking, and eventually that becomes unsustainable. Then there's content cost inflation. The value of premium content, particularly live sports, continues to escalate dramatically. It's an arms race. Comcast's new 11-year media rights deal with the NBA, beginning in the 2025-26 season, represents a significant new expense that will pressure margins in the media segment. That's billions of dollars.
Billions for basketball.
Yep. And this is in addition to the ongoing need to invest billions in original programming for Peacock, just to attract and retain subscribers in that crowded market. The price of entry keeps going up, squeezing profitability. And finally, capital intensity. Comcast operates in inherently capital-intensive industries. It's expensive to run these businesses. They must simultaneously fund network upgrades to maintain broadband competitiveness, like Project Genesis with DIACS 4.0, which will deliver multi-gigabit symmetrical speeds. That's billions. They also have to invest billions in new theme park construction, like Epic Universe, and to finance a slate of major motion pictures and streaming content. That's billions more.
Billions everywhere.
Exactly. This high level of capital expenditure can significantly constrain the amount of free cash flow available for debt reduction and shareholder returns. They have many mouths to feed, all demanding massive investment.
What's fascinating here is how all these financial pieces connect. The report highlights a central financial question that seems to underpin the entire investment thesis. What is that key question?
Yes. The financial narrative of Comcast is truly one where its core cash cow, that connectivity business, is under serious attack. The free cash flow generated by that connectivity segment is the absolute lifeblood of the entire enterprise. It funds everything, the growing dividend, the aggressive share buybacks, the massive long-term investments in Peacock and Epic Universe. The central financial question is whether this cash flow stream, which has been remarkably durable so far, is resilient enough to successfully finance the company's transition to a converged and experience-driven business model before the competitive pressures in broadband cause it to erode too quickly.
So can the old business fund the new business before the old business shrinks too much?
That's exactly it. The sustainability of this free cash flow, especially in the face of rising content costs, high capital expenditures, and ongoing subscriber losses, represents the most significant financial risk for investors. It's the ultimate balancing act they have to manage.
So with all this cash flow coming in from one side and these significant, often eye-watering investment needs on the other, how does Comcast decide where to put its money? What's their capital allocation strategy, and what does it tell us about their priorities right now?
Yeah, Comcast's capital allocation strategy is a really critical part of its investment story. It reflects management's priorities and its view on the best path to creating shareholder value in this environment. It's characterized by a disciplined, sort of three-pronged framework. First, investing in organic growth across its businesses. Second, maintaining a strong investment-grade balance sheet. And third, returning a significant amount of capital to shareholders. They aim for a balance, but their history shows distinct shifts depending on the strategic landscape and where they see the best opportunities.
So how has that played out historically?
Well, over the past decade, their historical capital deployment has been defined by periods of major strategic investment via M&A, big deals, followed by periods of deleveraging, paying down debt, and then robust shareholder returns. It's kind of a cyclical approach. Acquire, digest, pay down debt, return capital, repeat maybe.
Okay, let's break that down. CapEx first.
Right, capital expenditures. Comcast consistently invests heavily in its infrastructure and assets. Annual CapEx typically ranges from $9 billion to $11 billion in recent years. That's a lot of reinvestment. A significant portion of this is growth capital, directed towards initiatives like that Project Genesis network upgrade to DIO CSS 4.0, aiming for multi-gigabit symmetrical speeds to compete with fiber. And most notably right now, the multi-billion dollar construction of the Epic Universe theme park in Orlando. That's a massive single capital outlay demanding significant resources.
Okay, then acquisitions. They've made some big ones.
Huge ones. Their acquisition strategy has fundamentally shaped the company into what it is today. The 2011 acquisition of NBC Universal marked a strategic pivot into content creation and ownership. That move has been largely successful and a key contributor to earnings over the last decade. The 2018 acquisition of Sky for approximately $39 billion was a much bolder, maybe riskier move to expand internationally and gain a major direct-to-consumer platform in Europe.
Riskier how?
While strategically sound on paper, the high price paid for Sky significantly increased Comcast's debt load, nearly doubling it, remember, and it has, to date, yielded more modest financial returns compared to the NBC Universal deal. This really highlights the inherent risk of large M&A, even when it seems strategically appealing. You can overpay.
And shareholder returns. You said that's a priority.
Absolutely. Shareholder returns are a core tenet for Comcast, a consistent commitment. The company has a long and consistent track record of both dividend growth and share repurchases. Comcast has increased its dividend for 18 consecutive years. That's a truly strong signal of management's confidence in the stability and durability of its cash flows. The annualized dividend for 2025 was increased by 6.5% to $1.32 per share.
Pretty reliable dividend grower.
Very much so. And they've also been particularly aggressive with buybacks recently. In 2024 alone, Comcast repurchased $8.6 billion of its stock, reducing the number of shares outstanding by 5%. That supports the stock price and increases earnings per share. In January 2025, the board authorized a new $15 billion share repurchase program with no expiration date, reinforcing their commitment to returning capital to investors, especially when they perceive the stock to be undervalued.
The report includes a fascinating five-year capital allocation summary from 2020-2024. If we connect this to the bigger picture, what does that data tell us about their shifting priorities? It seems like buybacks became more prominent.
This data reveals a very clear pattern and a key insight into management's current thinking. It's quite telling. In the years immediately following the Sky acquisition, 2019, 2020 maybe, a larger portion of cash flow was directed towards debt reduction, as they understandably needed to bring down their leverage after that huge deal. However, in the last 3 years, from 2022 to 2024, management has aggressively shifted to returning capital to shareholders. Total returns, dividends, plus buybacks consistently exceeded 100% of the free cash flow generated in those years.
More than 100%. So they were borrowing slightly or using cash on hand?
Potentially using some cash on hand or just allocating nearly all FCF plus maybe a bit more. It demonstrates a strong conviction from management that returning capital via buybacks and dividends is currently a superior use of funds compared to, say, further large-scale M&A or even more rapid debt paydown, particularly when they likely perceive the stock to be trading at a discounted valuation. They believe their stock is cheap, and they're acting on that belief by buying it back aggressively. They're essentially investing in themselves.
And looking ahead, what are the priorities for capital deployment? Where do they intend to direct their financial firepower now? Still buybacks.
Management has articulated a pretty clear set of priorities going forward. The primary focus remains on organic investment to fuel growth in their key strategic areas. Network upgrades for broadband, DOCSIS 4.0, wireless expansion, Xfinity Mobile, content for Peacock, that's a big variable, and the development of new theme parks, Epic Universe primarily. This is followed by a commitment to maintaining a strong balance sheet, with a target of keeping net leverage in a stable, manageable range, likely around where it is now, or slightly lower. Finally, the remainder of the company's substantial free cash flow is expected to be returned to shareholders, largely through dividends and those ongoing buybacks. The significant and somewhat open-ended nature of content investment required for Peacock to remain competitive represents the largest variable in future capital requirements. That's the wild card. It could impact the amount available for shareholder returns if those content costs escalate beyond current projections.
That makes sense. Peacock spending is the big unknown.
Okay, let's talk moats. For any company, its ability to generate sustained profits depends on its competitive advantages, or moats, those unique strengths that protect it from competition. The report says Comcast's traditional moats are being challenged, but they're actively building new ones. What are these enduring strengths, and how are they evolving?
That's a great way to frame it. Their moats are definitely evolving. Comcast's vast HFC network remains its most significant competitive asset historically. This physical infrastructure, laid over decades, is incredibly capital-intensive and difficult for others to replicate, creating a formidable barrier to entry for new wireline competitors. But they're not relying solely on past investments. The company is in the midst of that multi-year network evolution, Project Genesis, deploying DOCSS 4.0 technology.
The network upgrade.
Right.
This upgrade is designed to deliver multi-gigabit symmetrical download and upload speeds across its footprint, effectively neutralizing the primary technological advantage of many fiber-to-the-home competitors. It brings cable closer to fiber in terms of capability. And this network is more than just physical cable now. It's increasingly an intelligent, AI-infused platform that provides unique data moat.
A data moat? Explain that.
By controlling the data flow for millions of customers, Comcast gathers unparalleled real-time telemetry on network performance, traffic patterns, device usage. This proprietary data is structurally inaccessible to competitors like pure-play streaming services or telcos. It fuels sophisticated AI models that optimize network operations, enable proactive maintenance, fixing problems before they happen, and enhance customer service. It creates a self-reinforcing technological advantage. It's a powerful, often unseen asset.
Interesting. Beyond the network.
Beyond the network, scale and vertical integration create a powerful flywheel for Comcast. Their sheer size and the fact that they own both content creation and distribution are huge assets. The company owns premier content creation engines in Universal Pictures and NBC Universal's television studios. This content can be monetized through theatrical releases, licensed to third parties, and most importantly, used to fuel its own distribution platforms like Peacock and its linear TV networks. This integration allows for symphony marketing campaigns, where the entire corporate portfolio is leveraged to promote key priorities like a new blockbuster film or the launch of a new theme park ride in a way no standalone competitor can possibly match. They can cross-promote endlessly.
Using all parts of the elephant to push one thing.
Exactly. Something pure content studios or pure distributors just can't do. And finally, the bundling advantage. We touched on this with convergence. The ability to offer customers a single integrated package of broadband, mobile, and video streaming services is a key strategic advantage. This converged bundle increases customer stickiness and reduces churn. A customer who relies on Comcast for their home internet and multiple lines of mobile service is much less likely to switch providers over a small price difference on just one product. Management has identified this as a core part of its strategy to defend its broadband base and increase overall customer lifetime value. It just makes it a real hassle to leave.
So they've got some strong traditional moats like the network, and they're building new ones with convergence and data. But here's where it gets really interesting. Despite these formidable strengths, the report identifies competitive vulnerabilities, suggesting cracks in that moat. Where are those vulnerabilities and how deep do they run?
Yeah, despite those formidable strengths, Comcast's moats are indeed facing significant erosion. And these cracks are quite deep in certain places. It's not an invulnerable fortress. Technology disruption is the most acute vulnerability right now. The proliferation of 5G has enabled fixed wireless access, FWA, to emerge as a viable, lower-cost broadband competitor. It directly attacks Comcast's core product without the need for a new, expensive wireline network build-out. At the higher end of the market, the continued build-out of fiber offers a product that is often perceived as technologically superior, providing even faster, more symmetrical speeds.
So it attacks from both the low end and the high end?
Pretty much. These technologies are fundamentally lowering the barriers to entry that protected the cable industry for decades. Comcast is no longer the undisputed king of broadband in many areas. They have real competition now. Then there are shifting consumer preferences. That secular trend of cord cutting and the consumer shift towards a la carte streaming services directly undermines the high-margin video bundle that was historically a cornerstone of Comcast's business model. The unbundling of content gives consumers more choice and weakens the pricing power of integrated distributors like Comcast, making it harder for them to dictate terms and package services the way they used to.
Consumers want choice, not necessarily the big bundle anymore.
Increasingly, yes. Capital intensity is another significant vulnerability. The need to constantly invest in both network infrastructure and content creation is a massive ongoing financial drain. Maintaining a competitive network requires billions in annual capital expenditures. Competing in the streaming wars requires billions more in content spending. This dual capital requirement can be a real drag on financial returns, especially if revenue growth slows down. It's a never-ending investment cycle that demands constant feeding. And finally, somewhat notoriously, customer service reputation. While the company insists it has made efforts to improve, Comcast has historically been plagued by a reputation for poor customer service.
I think most of our listeners probably have a story or two there.
Probably. In an increasingly competitive environment where customers have more choices than ever before, a negative customer service experience can be a key driver of churn. If a competitor offers a comparable product with better service, customers will jump ship, even over a seemingly minor issue. Reputation matters more when there are alternatives.
That's a clear picture of the battleground. So who's steering this massive ship through these choppy waters, and what's their strategic blueprint for navigating these challenges? Let's talk leadership.
Right. The quality and strategic vision of Comcast leadership team, helmed by longtime chairman and CEO Brian L. Roberts, are truly critical factors here. He's been the driving force behind the company for decades, really built it into what it is. CEO Brian Roberts has been at the helm of Comcast for over three decades now. He transformed the company from a mid-sized cable operator into the global media and technology powerhouse it is today. His tenure has been marked by a series of bold, company-defining acquisitions, AT&T Broadband way back, then NBC Universal, more recently Sky. This track record demonstrates immense strength in strategic vision and financial execution on a grand scale.
He's definitely a respected figure.
Highly respected and influential in the industry, known for his long-term perspective and focus on shareholder value. However, the report highlights that the current competitive landscape presents a fundamentally different challenge than the era of consolidation which he built his legacy. The present test is not about simply getting bigger through M&A anymore. It's about competing effectively on product, price, and service in a fragmented and technologically disruptive market. It's a whole new game he has to win.
A different skill set required now, perhaps? Who supports him?
Roberts is supported by a seasoned executive team with deep industry experience. President Mike Cavanaugh plays a crucial role, overseeing the company's broad operations. The leadership is generally structured around the two main segments: connectivity and platforms, and content and experiences. This structure is intended to allow for specialized focus on the distinct challenges and opportunities within each business, allowing for more agile responses to their very different operational realities.
And their track record on allocating all that capital we discussed.
On capital allocation discipline, management's track record here is, I'd say, mixed, but generally positive overall. The NBC Universal acquisition is widely viewed as a strategic success that has created significant value for the company over the years. The Sky acquisition, while strategically sound in its goal of international expansion, was executed at a very high valuation, as we noted, and has thus far delivered more muted returns. It also contributed significantly to the company's debt load. More recently, as we discussed, the focus has sharply shifted to organic investment and returning capital to shareholders, which has been executed with discipline and consistency, particularly through that aggressive share repurchase program. This suggests a focus on creating value for current shareholders when they believe the stock is undervalued.
So we have an experienced leader and a structured team. What are the key strategic initiatives they're actually implementing to address these monumental challenges? How are they trying to pivot this giant ship? What's the plan?
Right. The leadership team has implemented several key strategic initiatives to address the company's challenges head on. These are really their big bets for the future. The most critical strategic shift is the broadband pivot to convergence. This involves moving away from simply maximizing broadband subscriber volume to maximizing profitable relationships through convergence. By aggressively bundling high-speed internet with Xfinity Mobile, they aim to increase ARPU, reduce churn, and enhance customer lifetime value. This is a rational response to the rise of low-cost FWA competitors, effectively seeding the most price-sensitive segment to focus on a more profitable core customer.
And that seems to be working, based on the mobile ads.
The early results, including those record wireless net additions, are definitely promising. It shows this pivot is gaining traction. Next, there's the Peacock streaming strategy. The heavy investment in Peacock is a necessary, if very costly, response to the decline of linear television. Management is attempting to build a scalable streaming platform that can leverage its vast content library and sports rights. The strategy involves a hybrid model with both ad-supported and premium tiers. While the platform is seeing strong revenue growth and narrowing losses, its small market share and the immense cost of content make the path to sustained profitability a long and challenging one. It remains an uphill battle for market share in a very crowded field.
Still a question mark there. What else?
They're also prioritizing network modernization. The ongoing upgrade of the HFC network to DOCSIS 4.0 is a crucial defensive and offensive strategy. By enabling multi-gigabit symmetrical speeds, Comcast aims to achieve technological parity with fiber competitors, thereby protecting its high-value broadband customer base. This initiative is critical to ensuring the long-term competitiveness of their most important product, preventing them from falling too far behind technologically. Finally, strategic simplification. The recently announced plan to spin off several of its cable networks, think USA, CIFI, maybe others, into a new independent company called Versant Media Group, is a positive step towards simplifying the corporate structure.
Getting rid of some of the declining cable assets.
Essentially. This move allows for a more focused strategy for both the remaining core assets at NBC Universal and the spun-off entity. And it could help unlock value by reducing that conglomerate discount applied by the market, making it easier for investors to value the distinct parts of the business.
This raises an important question. What does all this mean for Brian Roberts' legacy? He's a leader who has defined Comcast for decades. How will this period shape how he's remembered?
That's a great question. Ultimately, the current period represents the most significant test of Brian Roberts' long and arguably very successful career. His leadership was forged in an era of industry consolidation and scale building, where getting bigger was often the winning strategy. Buy, integrate, repeat. The new era demands a different skill set, one focused on navigating technological disruption, fostering product innovation, and competing effectively in highly fragmented markets, where scale alone isn't enough. The success or failure of these strategic initiatives, convergence, Peacock, the network upgrades, simplification, will determine whether Comcast can successfully pivot from a legacy giant into a modern growing enterprise, or if it will be increasingly defined by the challenges to its traditional strengths. His legacy truly hinges on this transformation.
So let's get to the big question for potential investors. Does Comcast's current market price truly reflect its intrinsic value, given all these shifting dynamics and strategic bets? Where does the report land on valuation?
Well, a multifaceted valuation analysis suggests a significant disconnect between Comcast's current market price and what its intrinsic worth might actually be. The company's complex structure, combined with that negative sentiment surrounding its core broadband business, appears to have created a situation where the market is severely undervaluing the sum of its parts.
Okay, how is it undervalued? What metrics show that?
On a standalone basis, current valuation metrics show that Comcast's valuation multiples are trading at or near the absolute low end of their historical ranges. This reflects significant investor concerns, clearly. Its trailing 12-month price-to-earnings, or PE, ratio is approximately 8.1x. To put that in perspective, this is significantly below its historical five-year median. It's the market essentially screaming, "We don't believe in their future earnings power nearly as much as we used to," even though the underlying business is still churning out massive cash flow. The enterprise value to EBITDA, or EBITDA multiple, stands at approximately 5.7x. That's also at the low end of its historical range, suggesting the marketplace is a very low value on its earnings generation capability right now.
Okay, low multiples. What about cash flow yield?
Perhaps most compelling, based on $12.5 billion of free cash flow, FCF, in 2024, and a market capitalization of approximately $125 billion around that time, Comcast's FCF yield is roughly 10%.
10% free cash flow yield.
Yeah. Now, for you, the investor, that's incredibly compelling. It essentially means for every dollar you're putting into the stock at that price, the company is generating 10 cents in pure, unencumbered cash each year. That's a significantly higher cash return than you typically find in many large companies, highlighting a potential deep undervaluation the market might be missing due to focusing on the risks.
That's a compelling number. How does Comcast stack up against its peers, given its unique hybrid nature? I imagine it's hard to find a direct comparison.
You're absolutely right. Comparing Comcast to its peers is inherently challenging, precisely because of its unique combination of connectivity and content assets. It's neither a pure-play cable company nor a pure-play media conglomerate. It sits awkwardly in the middle. And this hybrid nature is a key reason for the valuation disconnect we're seeing. The market just doesn't quite know where to put it or how to value it cleanly.
So how does it compare?
Well, on one hand, Comcast trades at a discount to its primary cable and telecom peers like Charter and AT&T on an EBITDA basis, despite actually having a stronger balance sheet and lower leverage than both of them. So cheaper and less risky financially in some ways. On the other hand, when compared to media peers like Disney, which typically commands a premium multiple, or Warner Bros., Discovery, which is currently unprofitable and has its own issues, Comcast's valuation appears far more reasonable and stable. This comparison truly reinforces the idea that the market struggles to properly value Comcast's hybrid model, likely penalizing it for its complexity and not fully recognizing the value embedded in its diverse operations.
Okay, so it's cheap versus cable peers, reasonable versus media peers. The report then moves to a sum of the parts, SOTP analysis. This is often the most compelling argument for undervaluation in complex companies like this. So walk us through what the SOTP reveals. How does breaking it down piece by piece change the picture?
The SOTP analysis is really powerful here because it attempts to value each of Comcast's major business segments independently, as if they were standalone companies. This helps to strip away that conglomerate discount we talked about earlier.
Right, valuing the pieces separately.
Exactly. So the analysis starts by valuing the connectivity and platform segment, the broadband, business services, Sky, at an EBITDA multiple in line with its cable telecom peers. Using, for example, a 6.5x multiple on its $32.8 billion adjusted EBITDA in FY 2024, you get an implied segment value of around $213.2
billion. $213 billion, just for the connectivity part.
Just for connectivity. That's a huge number, almost double Comcast's entire current market capitalization at the time of the report. It suggests the market might be valuing this core engine very pessimistically. Then, for content and experiences, they break it down further, assigning different multiples based on the subsegment's characteristics. Theme parks are valued at a conservative 10.0x EBITDA multiple, reflecting its high-growth, high-margin nature. Studios at maybe 7.0x for a stable content production business. And media, which includes the declining linear networks but also the growing Peacock, gets a low 5.0x multiple given the challenges and ongoing investment needed.
Okay, adding all those pieces up.
After adding up these segment values and then subtracting corporate overhead costs and the company's net debt as of year-end 2024, the analysis suggests an implied equity value per share of approximately
$43.85. $43.85. And the stock was trading where?
In the low to mid $30 around the time of the report. So this SOTP analysis indicates a potential undervaluation of somewhere between 25% and 35%.
25 to 35% upside potentially?
Potentially, yes, according to this specific analysis. What it powerfully demonstrates is that the stable, cash-generating connectivity and platforms business alone, when valued fairly against its peers, can justify a significant portion, maybe even most, of the company's entire enterprise value. This implies that the market is currently assigning very little, maybe even negative value, to the extensive portfolio of content assets, including the highly profitable theme parks and the valuable studio IP library. It's like buying the profitable cable business and getting Universal Studios and the theme parks thrown in for free, or less than free.
That's a striking way to put it and a powerful argument for hidden value. So what are the different scenarios for how this could play out in the coming years? What does the report say are the best base and bear cases for Comcast?
Right. The report outlines three distinct scenarios for Comcast's future, each with different implications for investors, depending on how these competitive dynamics and strategic bets actually unfold. It's not certain, of course. In the best case scenario, everything clicks. There's successful execution of the convergence strategy, which stabilizes the broadband subscriber base, maybe even returns it to slight growth. Strong pricing power continues, driving ARPU growth. Peacock accelerates its path to profitability, reaching break-even or even positive EBITDA sooner than expected, perhaps by 2026 or 2027. And the opening of Epic Universe leads to a multi-year period of double-digit growth in the theme parks division, exceeding all expectations.
So firing on all cylinders. It's exactly. In this scenario, the SOTP valuation could even prove conservative, and the stock would likely re-rate significantly higher as investors recognize the successful transformation and the true combined value of its assets. The base case is more moderate. It assumes broadband subscriber losses continue but are managed effectively, with ARPU growth largely offsetting the impact on revenue. Peacock reaches break-even within the next 3-5 years, which is roughly the company's stated goal, and continues to scale steadily. Theme parks deliver solid, high single-digit growth good, but not explosive. The company continues to generate substantial free cash flow and return it to shareholders via dividends and buybacks.
Kind of a muddle-through scenario, but still generating value. Pretty much. In this scenario, the stock would likely grind higher over time as the market's worst fears fail to materialize, and the company demonstrates consistent execution. And then there's the bear case. Here, things go wrong. Intense competition from FWA and fiber leads to accelerating broadband subscriber losses and forces widespread price cuts, causing a significant decline in broadband ARPU and EBITDA. The core engine sputters badly. Peacock fails to achieve scale and continues to be a significant cash drain for much longer than projected, maybe beyond 2030, never achieving sustainable profitability. On top of that, maybe a global recession severely impacts travel and advertising, hitting the theme parks and media segments hard.
A perfect storm of negatives.
Exactly. In this scenario, free cash flow would decline sharply, potentially forcing a reduction in share buybacks and maybe even jeopardizing the dividend growth streak. This would likely lead to a further derating of the stock as the market loses confidence in management's ability to navigate the disruption and its strategic pivots fail to yield results.
No investment is without risk, especially in industries facing such disruption. The report lays out several primary risk factors pretty clearly. What should we be most aware of as we track this company? What are the biggest potential pitfalls?
Right, the investment case for Comcast is a classic value proposition, balancing that statistically cheap valuation and strong cash flows against significant, well-understood risks. These risks absolutely need to be monitored carefully by anyone considering an investment, starting with business risks, competitive intensity, and broadband. This is, without doubt, the single greatest risk. The core connectivity and platform segment, the company's profit engine, is under that simultaneous assault from technologically advanced fiber overbuilders and price-aggressive FWA providers. A faster-than-anticipated erosion of market share or pricing power in broadband would directly impair Comcast's ability to generate the cash flow needed to fund everything else, growth initiatives, shareholder returns. It's truly existential for their primary revenue source.
That's the big one.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Then there's the acceleration of cord cutting. While the decline of traditional video is known and expected, a sudden acceleration would hasten the decline of this high-margin revenue stream, pressuring overall profitability more quickly than anticipated. Streaming execution risk. Comcast is investing billions in content and technology for Peacock in a hyper-competitive market. There's a material risk this investment may simply not generate adequate returns. Peacock could fail to achieve the necessary scale to become sustainably profitable, resulting in significant value destruction for the company, basically throwing good money after bad. And economic sensitivity. Key segments like advertising and media, and especially the theme parks, are highly sensitive to the overall health of the economy. A significant economic downturn would negatively impact these businesses as people cut discretionary spending on travel and entertainment and advertisers pull back on marketing budgets.
Okay, those are the business risks. Financial risks. Debt is one we mentioned.
Right, moving to financial risks. High leverage. Following that Sky acquisition, Comcast carries substantial debt, approximately $99 billion as of Q1 2025. While the current net leverage ratio of 2.3x is considered manageable by rating agencies and the market, this large debt load reduces financial flexibility and exposes the company to refinancing risk, particularly in a rising interest rate environment. Rolling over that debt could become more expensive. Free cash flow sustainability. The entire investment thesis heavily relies on the durability of Comcast's free cash flow. A confluence of negative factors like declining broadband profits, escalating content costs for Peacock, and a cyclical downturn hitting parks and ads could impair FCF generation. That would threaten the company's ability to fund its dividend and share repurchase programs at current levels, which the market relies on. This is the central financial metric to watch constantly. And currency exposure. Through Sky, Comcast has significant exposure to foreign currency fluctuations, particularly the British pound and the euro. Changes in exchange rates can impact reported financial results and earnings when translated back to U.S. dollars, adding volatility.
And regulatory other risks.
Yes. Lastly, regulatory and other risks. Regulatory scrutiny. As a dominant provider of essential services, Comcast faces ongoing regulatory risk. Net neutrality rules limit pricing flexibility, and the potential for further antitrust scrutiny remains a constant threat, which could impact their business practices or even force divestitures down the road. And cybersecurity threats. Comcast's vast network and immense trove of customer data are prime targets for cyber attacks. A major data breach could result in significant financial penalties, severe reputational damage, and a damaging loss of customer trust, directly impacting their business and potentially leading to higher churn.
So given all of this, the strengths, the challenges, the strategic bets, and these significant risks, how does the report frame the balanced investment thesis for Comcast? Is it ultimately a buy, a hold, or a sell from the report's perspective? What's the bottom line?
The investment case for Comcast, as laid out in the report, is fundamentally based on the idea that the market is currently overemphasizing the near-term challenges and significantly undervaluing its durable assets and its substantial cash-generating power. This creates what the report sees as a compelling opportunity for long-term value investors.
So leaning positive based on valuation.
Leaning positive, yes, but acknowledging the risks. The investment merits are clear and substantial. The core broadband business, despite those subscriber headwinds, continues to show pricing power and generates enormous, stable free cash flow, underpinning the entire corporate strategy. The content and experiences segment has clear growth drivers, notably the theme parks with Epic Universe poised for significant growth and Peacock's improving financial trajectory, even if it's slow. The rapid growth of Xfinity Mobile shows the convergence strategy is gaining traction and creating a stickier customer base. Management is demonstrably committed to aggressive capital returns via a growing dividend and substantial share buybacks. And critically, the stock trades at a significant discount to its historical multiples, its peers, and its estimated sum of the parts value, suggesting a compelling margin of safety at current levels.
Okay, those are the positives. What about the flip side? The primary concerns?
The primary concerns, however, are equally important and temper any excessive bullishness. The key fear is that the competitive pressures in broadband aren't just temporary headwinds, but represent a permanent impairment of the core business model. The bear case, as we discussed, is an unmanageable decline in broadband subscribers and ARPU, crippling its main profit center. There's also the significant risk that the immense capital being poured into Peacock may simply never earn a sufficient return, acting as value destruction rather than value creation. And finally, the company's complex structure might just continue to warrant that conglomerate discount, preventing the realization of its underlying SOTP value without more aggressive strategic actions like further spinoffs or breakups. The market might just keep penalizing it for its complexity.
The report makes a compelling case for undervaluation, but for many listeners, I suspect, the headlines around cord-cutting and broadband competition might make them skeptical. Is this optimism truly justified, or are there strong counterarguments to this valuation assessment that the report perhaps acknowledges or that we should consider?
That's an important and very valid question. Skepticism is warranted given the headlines. Based on the comprehensive analysis in the report, Comcast's current valuation does appear genuinely attractive on paper. The market does seem to be pricing the company for a worst-case or near-worst-case scenario in its broadband segment, while assigning minimal value to its world-class portfolio of content and theme park assets. The substantial free cash flow yield, around 10%, and that significant discount to the SOTP valuation, that 25-35% potential undervaluation, provide a compelling quantitative basis for the assessment. It's essentially arguing that the market's pessimism has gone too far relative to the underlying cash generation and asset value. Now, a counterargument to this optimism, maybe not explicitly detailed as such in the report, but certainly what skeptics would argue, is that the cash cow isn't just under attack, but fundamentally broken.
Broken, not just challenged.
Exactly. Skeptics might argue that FWA and fiber competition will only accelerate, leading to not just subscriber losses, but significant, unavoidable price degradation across the board, ultimately crippling that free cash flow that funds everything else. Or they might argue that Peacock will become a permanent, large-scale money pit, never reaching profitability. However, the report's underlying thesis seems to suggest that management's strategic pivots the focus on ARPU over subs, the convergence bundle, the growth drivers like theme parks are strong enough to manage these headwinds and sustain substantial, albeit maybe not growing, cash flow. This makes the current valuation a compelling entry point for those willing to look past the negative near-term headlines and take a longer-term view.
So what could trigger the market to reevaluate this current pessimistic stance and start recognizing the hidden value you've described? What are the potential catalysts that could change the narrative?
Several potential developments could cause the market to reevaluate its perception of Comcast and potentially lead to a re-rating of the stock. First, stabilization of broadband subscribers. Any concrete sign that the rate of subscriber losses is slowing, stabilizing, or even turning slightly positive would be a major positive catalyst. It would signal that their strategic pivot is working and the core business isn't collapsing. Second, a successful launch of Epic Universe. Stronger than expected attendance figures and financial performance from the new theme park starting in late 2025 and into 2026 would unequivocally highlight the growth power and high margin nature of the content and experiences segment, forcing the market to recognize its value. Third, Peacock profitability. Achieving, or even better, exceeding break-even targets for Peacock would validate the company's expensive streaming strategy and remove a significant earnings drag, freeing up cash flow. And finally, strategic actions. Further corporate actions, such as the successful execution of the plan for SAMP Media spinoff, or potentially other moves to simplify the corporate structure, could help unlock the value identified in the SOTP analysis by making the distinct parts of the business easier for investors to understand and value separately.
For anyone looking to track this story, whether as a potential investor or just an interested observer, what are the absolute key metrics to keep an eye on? The ones typically released in their quarterly earnings reports that will tell us if their strategy is playing out as hoped.
Right. To track the ongoing validity of this investment thesis, you should closely monitor these specific metrics, as they are the direct indicators of how well Comcast is executing its strategy and navigating the challenges. For operational metrics, pay close attention to broadband net additions and ARPU. These are the most critical for gauging the health of the core profit engine. You need to watch both subscriber numbers and the revenue per subscriber to see if they're successfully managing competition and pricing. Domestic wireless line net additions. This is a key indicator of the success of their convergence strategy and how sticky their customer base is becoming. Strong growth here is positive. Peacock paid subscribers and revenue. Essential for tracking the streaming service's scale and its progress on the path to profitability, need to see both subscriber growth and revenue growth eventually leading to lower losses. Theme park revenue and attendance. Crucial for monitoring the performance of a primary growth driver, especially after Epic Universe opens in mid-2025, this needs to show strong growth. And video subscriber net losses. To monitor the rate of decline in the traditional pay TV business. Is it accelerating, decelerating, or stable?
Okay, those are the operational KPIs. What about financial metrics?
For financial metrics, keep a sharp eye on free cash flow generation. This is the ultimate measure of the company's financial health and their ability to fund all their priorities, CapEx, dividends, buybacks. Needs to remain robust. Net leverage ratio, net debt adjusted EBITDA, to ensure balance sheet strength and that their significant debt load remains manageable, especially if interest rates stay elevated, needs to stay within their target range. Segment-adjusted EBITDA and margins, to track profitability trends in both the connectivity and platforms and content and experiences segments, you want to see where the profits are truly coming from and if margins are holding up, especially in connectivity. And finally, return on invested capital, ROIC. This is more of a long-term measure of management's effectiveness in allocating capital efficiently and generating adequate returns on their significant investments, particularly in things like Sky, Peacock, and the theme parks.
Wow, what a deep dive into Comcast. We really journeyed from understanding its dual identity as a cash engine and a growth engine through the intense competitive battles in broadband and streaming, all the way to how its capital is allocated and what its leadership is doing to navigate these pretty significant challenges. It's truly a company at a crossroads, isn't it?
Yeah.
Facing significant risks, but also, according to this analysis, holding some potentially compelling hidden value.
It really highlights that fundamental tension, doesn't it? A legacy giant striving to transform itself in rapidly evolving industries. The durability of that core connectivity cash flow is just. It's the absolute key to funding everything else and determining the success of their ambitious growth plans. Everything hinges on that.
Precisely. And it leaves us with a thought for you, our listener, to mull over. Given Comcast's multifaceted identity and its current valuation, does its future depend more on flawlessly executing its strategic pivots in the face of relentless competition? Or does it depend more on the market eventually, finally, appreciating the full, diversified value of its existing assets, perhaps valuing it more like the sum of its very distinct, often profitable parts? What part of this complex story resonates most with your understanding of the future of media and connectivity? Where do you see this heading? Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. We hope this is giving you a shortcut to being well-informed, maybe with plenty of aha moments along the way. Until next time, keep learning and keep exploring.